By way of introduction, I'm sure that everybody has a unique experience, a different experience in this regard, and it also may depend on a generation or a generational thing. But there is the concept in America, or as you would say, in America, something called the melting pot. And this idea of the melting pot is a way, an idea, I think, that we can frame this morning's piece. Because what is the idea of a melting pot? So you have people from all backgrounds and all cultures and all nationalities who are coming together. And you see this also in a Jewish context, in a halachic context, that you have Jews from all kinds of backgrounds and perspectives and experiences, and everybody is kind of in one. We got it. So everybody's coming together. So, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein wonders in a tshuva, he says, well, wait a second, what do we do when we have people of different minhagim who end up landing in the same place? So this might find its expression in a synagogue, in a shul, on Chol HaMoed, whereby in previous generations there were the tefillin wearers and the non-tefillin wearers. It was kind of like the Dr. Seuss, the star-bellied sneeches and the non-star-bellied sneeches. Or you had the people who were shaving in one part of Sfiras HaOmer, and then you had the other people in the other part. And then, so what happens when everybody falls into the same melting pot? That's really what's happening in America. So Moshe has a chew about this, because today, it's not like it was, certainly in my grandparents' time, or even the way my parents reflect on it, hearing from their parents that, well, you had Galicianers who were basically allergic to the Hungarians. You know, if you were from this section of Poland, you didn't really socialize with people from that. But that's very much gone in a lot of places. Not everywhere, but in my experience, it's a melting pot. So I reflect on that in this chapter, which is the 11th chapter, a new concept we're going to talk about this week and next week called Musar. Because to me, maybe if I was more knowledgeable or I was more discerning and I didn't live in a melting pot, you know, I would say there's a school of Musar and then there are different approaches within the school of Musar and you have to be a Musar adherent to learn Musar, so to speak, which obviously, of course, you don't. But the idea of Musar as being an approach to Jewish learning and Jewish life was one that had a very specific following. In Europe, there were yeshivot, there were schools, there were students, there were communities, learning communities that followed the Derech of Musar. I'm not sure that I'm knowledgeable enough in my melting pot of learning to be able to always identify, well, is this a Musar school of learning or is this a non-Musar school of learning? I'm not sure that I know enough. So I'm not sure if this is a Mila or a Chisaron, but to me, in my growth and my experience, I'm not sure that it really matters. Right. We're looking for Torah teachings that are going to help bring us closer to Hashem, that are going to raise us up, that are going to inspire us and move us to grow. So I'm not sure if what we have learned until this point, although Rav Volbi is certainly from the great Musar giants, I don't know if what we have been learning for the whole year, would it qualify as Musar? Is it not Musar? Is it Hasidus? Is it Machshava? I don't know what it is. So that's my general introduction to the section about Musar, to say I'm not sure what the school of Musar is. I'm not adequately knowledgeable enough. All I know is that it's very meaningful, so let's learn it. So now Rav Volbi is going to describe to us in his words what is Musar. Now the word Musar, it can have multiple connotations. So one connotation of the word Musar has the idea of, you know, the image of somebody with a rod and somebody who's yelling and screaming, right? That's one image of Musar. Another image of Musar Avicha, has to do with the strict lines of law. Shema Bani Musar Avicha, what's right and what's wrong, and that's it. But Rav Volbi tells us that there is another way to look at the term Musar. There is a guy by the name of Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K. He has a very interesting TED Talk, and he has a book. You're nodding already. You could do this sheer by yourself. Simon Sinek has a basic principle, basic yesod, one word. It's a three-letter word. What is that? Why? Simon Sinek says, he says that everything comes down to why. You can get his book. It's a quick read. You can watch his TED Talk. Everything comes down to why. Why are we doing what we're doing? And that drives everything. Once you know the why, you know the other two things in the circle. What are the other two things? The other two things in your concentric circles are what and how. So why is primary. So using that as an analogy, the why of our Yiddishkeit is what's driving us. It's our neshamas pulling us, you know, away from the boats, the mud of, you know, the selfishness and the base desires of this world, pulling us up to be more noble, more close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the why. And that we could talk about in different ways. The what are the mitzvos. How do you define the how? What is how? How is the manner in which you execute those what's. You know, the why is the motivation. The what is what you're going to do. The how is how do you go about it? Or in other words, what type of person are you as you do those things? Because you can have someone who has the same why, the same what, but their how looks very different. So says Rav Volpe, Musar, what is Musar? Hi chachmas habitzua shel kol haTorah kula. It is the knowledge, the wisdom, actually, of bitzua. What does the word levatzea mean in Hebrew? It means to execute, to accomplish, to pull off. It is the wisdom of how to make something happen. Chachmas habitzua. He says, for example, b'chol medina, in every country, yesh guf mechokek. There is a body, the word guf means a body, mechokek. What does mechokek mean? What is a chok? A law. So what is a mechokek? Guf mechokek is a legislative branch. Every society has a legislative branch. So in America, that's called the Congress. And that's why he says the parentheses, Asifa Leumit, or Knesset, and V'guf Mevatzea. What is a guf mevatzea? In English, we would call that the executive branch. Levatzea means to execute. So that's what he calls the memshala, the government. The government is, at least in a representative democracy, you have a government. The government has different components. It has the legislative component that sets the laws, and then the people hire and deputize people, whether it's the president or the, you know, the prime minister or whatever. They're going to deputize people to execute the laws that are created by the legislative branch. So that's why he says, for example, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lacha. You have two kinds of legal entities, right? You have shoftim, judges, and then you have shotrim. You have officers who execute it. So the Justice Department, they don't make the laws, they just carry them out. And the senators and the congressmen, they don't execute the laws, they don't have any power of enforcement, but they make the laws. Oh. He says the same thing comes to building a house. Bebinyan batim, third line in the paragraph, yeshna chochmas ha-tichnun. There is the chochma, the wisdom of the tichnun, the ordering, which we would call the architecture. That's ha-adrichal ha-misaretet ha-tavnis, the architect who sets out the lines. The chachmas ha-handasa, and that is the engineer, the person who actualizes the vision of the architect. The musica, similarly, you have the author of the music, and then you have the orchestra that plays the music, that executes the music. Similarly, it says next paragraph, the same dichotomy. Moshe was told to build the Mishkan. He was given the instructions. Was he the executor of the Mishkan? No, who was the executor of the Mishkan? That's right. It's interesting. Right? We think that Moshe Rabbeinu was in charge of the Mishkan. He was. He was in charge of the vision of the Mishkan. But who was in charge of making sure that it was executed correctly? That was Bezalel. And that's why he says, second line of the second paragraph, V'nam ha'ol of Bezalel kel ha'yisa, you were created in the shadow of Hashem, ki yada l'chavein heitev seder ha'bniyah, he knew very well how to organize the order of the building. Bezalel knew, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was given the design, but Bezalel knew how to make it happen. Says Rav Volbi, next paragraph, Kach ha-halacha, so the halacha, Hichok u-mishpat ha-torah ha-melamedas osan u-malasos. The halacha tells us what to do. And we know very well why we should do this. We want to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want to grow. We want our neshama to thrive. V'chachmas ha-musar, what is musar? He toras Habitsua Ketzad Lekayim HaMitzvos. Musar is how to fulfill all those mitzvahs. We're told what to say and what not to say. Well, how do you go about living that kind of life? We're told to light Shabbos candles. Well, how do you light Shabbos candles? We're told to be devoted to our parents, to serve our parents. Well, how do we serve parents? What is the way? What's the manner? What kind of service are we doing? And where does this come from? Next paragraph. Es Yisodo Seo, the foundations of this, Hinichu Hanavim, the prophets left us. B'mishnah Nikva Olam B'maseches Avos. We got Pirkei Avos. That outlines a lot of the how. B'gemara, we have Agarata, the homilies. That's why a lot of these, they're told as stories. They're told as parables or images, because it's about modeling. It's what do we see in another person that says, oh, look how that person lives their life. Look at that idea and how that can inspire me to be the kind of person, not to do the kind of things, it's to be that kind of person. And we also, asher ba halachos hilchos deos, there are what the Rambam calls Hilchos Deos, the laws of character development. And there are more and more, he says, books and teachings from our sages. So now go to the next paragraph. He says something very interesting. Now that we know the difference between the what and the how. He says, Bemerkaz ha-halacha, what is in the center of halacha? And if you were to ask a brisker, a rabbi from the Soloveitchik dynasty, what are you always interested in? He said, I'm interested in halacha. Ish halacha, the halachic man. So what is the kind of question that the brisker methodology in the analysis of halacha, what question are they always asking? They're always asking one question. What? What is it? What is the obligation? What is the nature of the obligation? What is the essence of it? What is its character? What is its classification? We're asking what? So, what is in the center of your inquiry if you're interested in halacha? The mitzvah, the obligation, the din. You're always looking at the din. What is the din? What is the measure of the din? What's the nafkamina of the din? It's always, your question is about the din. As you would say in brisker terminology, it's about the cheftza, the item, the chefetz. You're worried about the cheftza. Says Rav Volbi, B'merkas halacha omedes ha-mitzvah atzma. The mitzvah stands in the center. B'merkas ha-musar. What stands in the center of a musar inquiry, of a musar journey? Ha-adam ha-mekayma. The person. Interesting. The locus of a mitzvah is in the action. But the locus of the mutzer is in the person. So the center of the inquiry is, how did I do about it? How did I do that? How do I go about doing this? How do I prepare for it? How do I fulfill it? How do I feel about it? How do I react to it? Not in a narcissistic, self-absorbed manner, but in a question of, how do I fit into this fixed action? So Revolvi now says something amazing. He says, therefore, that, well, if it's about focusing on how do I fulfill it to the best of my potential, that now is a much more subjective type of experience. The mitzvah, that action is defined. It's defined legally. It was defined legally 1,800 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. It's defined for you. It's very fixed. It doesn't really matter to the mitzvah, to the halachic, to the ish halacha, if you're in a good mood or in a bad mood, if you had a good day or a bad day. It doesn't really matter if you're feeling inspired or not inspired. It doesn't matter whether you're a young person or an old person, generally speaking. It is what it is. But that's when you look at the thing. But when you, let me just finish this one sentence. He says, but when you look at the person, if the Adam is in the Merkaz, well now, every time I'm going to be Mekayim Mitzvah, it could be the same Mitzvah. It's going to change all the time. Because if it's about how I'm doing it, well, how am I doing it? Well, how am I doing? How am I coming to the mitzvah? My approach might be different if I'm coming from a place when I'm inspired or I'm feeling burnt out. If I'm in a rut or if I'm in a good place. If I've been doing it for 10 times, maybe my approach, my focus is going to be different than if I'm doing it for the first time. He says, your whole experience is going to be different based on where you are in your station in life. Yeah.
The halacha, we see all these svarim and everything that have been written, it's not the same. 100 guys have 100 things to say.
Right. So right.
Doesn't remain permanent. It's everybody has their own say.
Yes. So of course, right, 100%. What Mrs. Bellis is pointing out here is that you can have one line in the Shulchan Aruch, which is going to be applied differently in different times. And which is going to be interpreted differently by different commentators. So there's going to be a whole world of halacha. But those people, if you were to classify it between the objective and the subjective, they're all looking at it with an objective lens. Right? Now, and of course, by the way, also, a psak halacha also is personal. You know, you can ask the same shaila to the same rav at a different time in your life. One time you'll get one answer, a different time you get a different answer. So the application of halacha is also very personal. But if you look at it, I guess, if you take away all that and you just say, well, what is a mitzvah? A mitzvah is objective. So the what is the same. Now, you're going to argue how to define that what. But he's saying the how is going to be always personal. So he says, Shinui matzavim, changes in circumstance. V'chilufei zmanim gormim gam shinuyei chiyuvim. So, for example, he says in the second line, Ha'aliyah michutz la'aretz la'aretz Yisrael. So he says this is true in different circumstances. Let's say someone goes on aliyah. Or, next line, Shalom u'milchama, etc. He says, obviously, the halacha changes, as you were pointing out, with your circumstance. Now you live in Israel, you have mitzvahs atulius ba'aretz. However, go to the fourth line. Ulam harbe yoser mimasha matzavim chayvim hanaga acheres mitzad halacha. Much more than the halacha requires changes as your circumstance changes. He mechayvim gisha acheres mitzad chachmas habitzua hamuser. Meaning, the halacha, the building, the architect, could make a plan for a building that is completely whole, finished to the detail. That's what the architect looks at. But the engineer comes and says, well, wait a second. The ground in this particular area is too soft for that plan. Or you thought you were going to build a basement, but the water table is too high. You know, this architect I assume architects take this to cheshbon, but just let's play with this analogy for a second. Let's just go with it. The architect sits in an office, and he thinks, and he makes cheshbonos, he makes calculations. But the engineer comes to the house and says, I understand, you want to take out a wall in this building? You want to take out, you know, you want to put on a second floor? In theory, you could draw a second floor, but I can tell you by the weight-bearing load that this structure can handle, it can't handle a second floor. Or it can handle two, but not three. What's the difference? The plan is the same. The halacha is the same. It's just the circumstance is going to be different. So your approach is going to be totally different. The mussar of how we take a halacha and we approach it is going to be different where we're coming from. If somebody is coming from a place where they have no exposure to Judaism, so that is going to require a different application than somebody who has been observant their whole life. That's the chachma of mussar. The chachma of mussar figures out, where do I fit into this equation? Because if a person, rachmana litzlan, does not have the chachma of mussar, what happens? So they could have a mitzvah, which is, of course, the mitzvah is terrific, amazing. But when they perform that mitzvah, either they perform that mitzvah with no feeling, no enthusiasm, no love, no life. It's dead. It's like a skeleton, which is a shame. It's not a fulfillment of really coming closer to Hashem in the fullest way. Or worse, without a little bit of mussar, without that thinking about how it affects me, it could even be, in some cases, delivered in a way that somebody won't appreciate. If you don't understand where that person is coming from, and you just give them the halacha without explaining or realizing where that person is, so then it might not fit for them. They might reject it. They might rebel against it. Because it lacks the understanding of the chachmas habitsua. How to apply it. It's a whole nother chachma. It's one thing to learn a sugya, it's another thing to apply it. How do we apply it? So it's one thing to apply it for others, but the main focus here is, how do I apply it in my own life? I'm going to come into a new scenario, a new circumstance, a new mitzvah, or a mitzvah that I didn't do since yesterday. Well, where am I today? How do I prepare myself for it properly? Do I need to do something extra to make sure that I'm going to really be in the moment and in the mitzvah? Or no, I'm ready. That's a chochma sabitzua. That's a question of execution. If I think about how I'm going to execute it, right, that's going to be different than just falling into it. So let's finish with the last paragraph. We're going to skip the rest of this for time. Hare shemusar hu toras ha'adam b'yachaso l'mitzvos. Mussar is the Torah of the person as it relates to the world of mitzvos. Torah zu amuka urechavahi. It is very deep and it is very wide. B'zeh aleinu levayer. It is up to us with this to explain es ha'ikarim shebalim ha'musar. We're now going to have to figure out, and we'll only have a couple of minutes next week, what are the fundamentals of mussar? Limud ze hu hachidush ha'ikari l'maisa shechidsha chachmas ha'musar. He says this was the great innovation of the mussar movement, of the mussar transformation, led by Rav Yisrael Salanter. V'umechad shah ha'gadol rabino ha'gaon Rav Yisrael Salanter. Sheyichlal ofen ha'limud ka'asher yizbar be'ezras Hashem. As we're going to explain. So what's his goal? His goal is to explain to us the fundamental tenets of the how. How we go about preparing for mitzvos, approaching mitzvos, how we experience mitzvos. And because the Adam, the person, is in the Merkaz, it becomes very subjective. And now this brings us back to what we've been talking about a lot in the past, which is self-awareness. How can a person address the person in the center if they have no awareness of that person? I can understand now why Rav Volpe, as a person of Mussar, is so interested in self-awareness, in emotional intelligence. Because if it's about growing the person, about refining ourselves as we perform the mitzvahs, if we don't know who we are, how can we go about that? The Chochmah of Musar of Yitzuah requires that we get to know ourselves. So as we get to know ourselves, we can say, oh, I know I have this kind of temperament. I know I have this kind of character. Well, this is what I need to do to sharpen it and refine it. Have a great week. Please God, we will conclude next week. Be'ezus Hashem.